Welcome into the Whole Hog Podcast, and Seth Campbell, we're going to be joined alongside Bob Holt in just one second. We're going to continue our series as we look back over the past decade, and we're winding down that series. We have one more to go. Scotty Bournon will join us next week to wrap up that series, but we've had a great host of people come in and really give their opinions, and some of the people that they're really good memories, I guess is the best way to put that, from over the past decade. And if you missed any of them, you can go back. They're all on our podcast channel, so make sure to check them out there. Now I want to welcome in the great, the legend, Bob Holt into the podcast. Bob, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh yeah, no problem.
And so we decided the best way for us to do this is, since Bob has so much knowledge up there in his head, he's covered so many people and so many teams, that we figured the best way to do this would be to break it down by a person, not necessarily the team or the memory, but the person and what comes with it and the people that stand out. And so we're going to do it that way. And one of the first people that Bob mentioned that stood out to him was a basketball player, SEC player of the year, and that was Bobby Portis.
Yeah, Bobby, when he was a sophomore in the 2014-15 season, the SEC player of the year, I believe he was the first Razorback to do that since Corliss Williamson had back-to-back years as a sophomore and junior. So that shows how special Bobby was here. And of course, he led Arkansas back to the NCAA tournament. Him and Michael Qualls were the standouts on that team. But yeah, Bobby had a nice freshman year, but he really took off that sophomore year, had a lot of big scoring games. I remember, I should have looked this up, but they beat Alabama at here in Walton Arena, and Bobby scored like 35. I think the rest of the team scored 20-something. Nobody else could hit a shot. Bobby couldn't miss. And then they also beat Alabama in overtime, I believe it was. Kai Madden kind of threw up a prayer at the buzzer, and Bobby tipped it in. I think I wrote something like, Kai Madden threw up a prayer, and Bobby answered it. So he just had a lot of really good games. Obviously, he was a first-round draft pick by the Bulls, and he's with the Knicks now and, you know, doing pretty well.
Bobby was somebody that was good, like you said, obviously, but then he put Arkansas fans, he gave them something that they hadn't had in a while, which was success. They were a team that was ranked in the top 25 throughout most of that year with Mike Anderson. And, you know, that was something that Arkansas basketball program hadn't had up until that point for a while.
Yeah, and Bobby was from Little Rock Hall. He could have gone anywhere. I believe he's the only McDonald's All-American Mike Anderson signed in 8 seasons. And Bobby, you know, might have well come here no matter who the coach was. Obviously, he had a good relationship with the coaching staff. But yeah, you look at some of these guys like Malik Monk and Kayvon Allen and Archie Goodwin, who left the state. Can't blame them. Going to places like Kentucky and Florida, I'm not blaming them at all. But, you know, Bobby's a really heralded player who could have gone a lot of places, who chose to stay and play for the Razorbacks.
And then sticking with basketball, there's a few other guys that stayed, but one guy from Central Arkansas that came up here is Daryl Macon, and he made an impact as well.
Yeah, Daryl's a really fun guy to cover. We really hit it off. He seemed to enjoy kind of, you know, having fun at press conferences, which was nice, because, you know, it used to be you'd go in the locker room and you'd go to practice every day and you get to know these players, you know, fairly well. Not like you hung out with them, but I mean, you got to know them pretty well. Like nowadays, I know Joe Klein pretty well. I know Pat Bradley, guys like that, you know, that I can call up, and they're doing media things now, where Joe's also running a restaurant. But, you know, the press conferences, guys up at the podium or the tables, it can be a little, you know, boring or kind of stale. But Daryl always had fun up there. I think he enjoyed the give and take with the media. We certainly, I think, enjoyed talking with him. And he was a great player, too. And he was a guy who had to go kind of the long way to get here. He had to go to junior college, and he had a really good, you know, career there, and then came back, and he helped Arkansas go to back-to-back NCAA tournaments, you know, Little Rock Parkview kids. So I'm sure fans remember him fondly, and he's having a shot to play pro ball too. So he was a really good player, just a really good guy too.
Yeah, and him, Jalen Barford, they were a part of that team that was the 8 seed, I believe, that beat Seton Hall in the NCAA tournament and then had North Carolina on the ropes and just couldn't finish.
Yeah, Arkansas was up. I think they were up 65-60 with about 3:48 left. Oh, you write these things enough times, they kind of get embedded in your head. And you know, Daryl had done something. I can't remember if it was his knee or his ankle, but he wasn't 100%. He was kind of limping, and of course, there was a couple of questionable calls there that fell Carolina's way, as things seemed to happen like that to the Blue Bloods, like Carolina and Duke and Kentucky in the NCAA tournament. And I think Carolina finished on a 12-0 run. And, you know, that was an Arkansas team that, you know, they had Carolina, and just, you know, you got to give Carolina credit for coming back. And just, it's, you know, just kind of a convergence of bad things happened for Arkansas. But that would have been Arkansas's first Sweet 16 team since 1996. I'm trying to remember if they would have played Butler, but they were going to go to the Sweet 16 in Memphis. So that would have been great for Arkansas fans. I got to believe there were a ton of Arkansas fans in Memphis. And so that's really unfortunate for Arkansas and their fans that they couldn't quite hold on against Carolina that night.
What I remember about that series of events is I think that they were going to go on and play Butler, which was, I think, a four seed or something in the NCAA tournament. But it also set up to where if on the other side the team took care of business that was the higher seed, it would have been Kentucky. And you would have gotten to play Kentucky, who had Malik Monk at that time. Again, if you were able to beat Butler into the Elite Eight and a chance to go to the Final Four, I was like, that's something that they draw up in storybooks and in books, and not something that would happen in real life. But obviously it didn't happen.
And can you imagine what the arena, the crowd would have been like in Memphis with Arkansas playing Kentucky? Probably would have been half and half. It would have been like the 90s when they played in Atlanta and in the Georgia Dome and had 30,000. It was like 15,000 Arkansas fans and 15,000 Kentucky fans. I mean, Kentucky fans know how to get tickets, but Arkansas fans do too. So that would have been a lot of fun. It's, you know, it's too bad it didn't turn out that way.
Yeah, that's one of those what ifs that you look back and you kind of look back and smile at it, but also you kind of frown because it didn't happen. But staying with the basketball and some guys that took the long way around, there's a guy on the team right now that you enjoy covering that talk about the long way around. He went, he came, and then he came all the way back around, full circle almost.
Yeah, Jimmy Witt. Jimmy was from Columbia, Missouri, where I went to school. And he had a good relationship with Mike Anderson's staff when they were at Missouri. So Jimmy came here. He was the best player in Missouri, averaged over 30 points, could have gone a lot of places. And he came here, and as a freshman, he played some. I think he averaged about 17 minutes, about 6 points. So not a bad freshman year, but I think his expectations were a lot higher. And then they knew they were bringing in Daryl and Jalen because they needed help. And so Jimmy decided to go to SMU, where he had a really, really good couple seasons. He redshirted, and then he had two good seasons where he averaged double figure points and rebounds and assists. I think last year he averaged like about 13 points over 6 boards and over 4 assists. So that's very good. And they had some decent teams, not great. I think he went there thinking he'd play for Larry Brown, who's a Hall of Fame coach. And then Larry Brown stepped down. And Tim Jankovich, who's a coach there, is a very good coach. But, you know, Larry Brown's, there's only one Larry Brown. So then, interestingly enough, Jimmy's older brother, Marcus, who played at Columbia College in Missouri, which is like an NAIA powerhouse, they're like the NAI Lakers or Bucks, I guess, nowadays. And he was a GA for Eric Musselman at Nevada. And now he's down in Dallas. I think he moved to Dallas to help Jimmy work out and stuff. Now he stayed down there. But Jimmy said Marcus would encourage him to check out Arkansas, at least give Eric a shot. And I think Eric really convinced Jimmy that he'd fit into the system well, that I think he showed him some analytics things that would help him play professionally, whether, you know, NBA, overseas, whatever. And I knew Jimmy was a good pickup for him, but he's really, really had a great year. And I will not be shocked if he plays in the NBA because his defense is so good. And, you know, he's got that mid-range jumper. And, of course, in the NBA, they have the salary cap. So you need some guys making the rookie minimum wage. You know, they can't all be making $20 million a year. So I'm not saying Jimmy's going to play in the NBA, but I think he's going to get a shot. I hope it works out for him. And he's definitely going to play professional basketball somewhere, whether it's, you know, G League, overseas, whatever. But he's just such a good person. You know, talking to him before they went to Missouri, he had a bad back. You could tell he wasn't feeling good, but he did interviews with us. He talked after the game, a tough loss back in his hometown. And, you know, guys don't have to do that these days. You can ask, you know, the SED, hey, can so-and-so talk? And, you know, Mike Kaywood, who does a really good job, he went back in the locker room and Jimmy came out, you know. So, but Jimmy could have said, hey, I just don't feel like it. And I wouldn't have blamed him. But so he's a really, really good, he's having a great year. He's a really good person, really good representative of the program. And it's a pretty unique story for a guy to start here, be away for 3 years, and then come back and have such a good season.
Yeah. And as you said, Jimmy is going to get the shot to play professionally, wherever that is, whether it's overseas, G League, in the NBA. And I think that kind of speaks to Eric Musselman and the staff of they figured out what Jimmy does best and let him do that, because this team needed somebody, because Jimmy came in as a guy that could offensive rebound or just rebound in general from the guard spot, and Arkansas knew that they'd need that, but he's done so much more, and without him, Arkansas is not even the position where they're at right now.
Yeah, I remember talking to Eric Musselman in the summer, and Jimmy's rebounding was really a key to bringing him in. Not that he didn't have other good aspects to his game, but I got to believe that they're pleasantly surprised that at the level he scored at. I know he had the game against Auburn where he didn't score. He was 0 for 7, but now we know his back was bothering him. I got to believe that was a factor. And, he's been a lockdown defender, good rebounder, which, Lord knows they need that. And he's scored really well. And like I said, I'm not in the locker room, obviously, with these guys, but the way he deals with us, I just have to believe he's a great locker room presence. He's just so mature. You're going through a rough patch like they are right now. You need guys that are older, been through some things. And I just got to believe Jimmy's a really stabilizing, force for that team right now.
When you run through the guys that have come through the basketball program in this past decade, Arkansas as a team didn't really reach where they wanted to. As a fan of Arkansas, you kind of expected the team to maybe push through and get to that Sweet 16 level sometime in the NCAA tournament. But when you start looking individually at guys that came through this decade, there are a ton of great players. When you start with the Bobby Portis and Michael Qualls, and then you can end all the way to the Jimmy Witts, the Isaiah Joes, and of course, got to mention Mason in there as well.
Well, yeah, and Daniel Gafford, who should talk. He was a unique athlete. Don't think I've ever covered anybody with that kind of size and that kind of athleticism. I mean, obviously, guys, Moses Kingsley's a really good athlete, but Daniel, just the way he could get up and down the court. That's, to me, was the most incredible thing about him, was the way he got up and down the court for a guy that size. Because I still remember this. They were playing Florida and St. Louis in the SEC tournament. I guess it was 2018, and they hadn't beaten. They'd lost like 7 in a row to Florida. That's been a really tough team for them to beat. They haven't won down in Gainesville since 95. And Florida's been a real thorn in their side, beating them in Bud Walton a number of times. And it was late in the game. Arkansas was up by 7 or 8. Whatever it was, you knew they were going to win. There was less than a minute left. And Daniel blocked a shot. And instead of acting like, hey, look, I blocked a shot, he sprinted down to the other end, like it was a 2-point game or tie game or something. And I remember just thinking, wow. I mean, so he's a great hustle, another really good guy, just incredible athleticism. And I think he's going to have a really good NBA career. But, yeah, when Mike Anderson came here, he'd taken UAB to the Sweet 16, taken Missouri to the Elite Eight. I think that's the farthest Missouri's ever gotten. I think that was the third time. So you really felt like, well, wow, Arkansas has got a higher ceiling than Missouri and certainly UAB. So, give Mike a couple of years and they're going to be going to Sweet 16, maybe a Final Four even. And it just didn't happen. And maybe that chance was that North Carolina game we talked about. Because, you got to be good. You got to be lucky too, And, Arkansas just wasn't lucky in some of those situations. Mike Anderson did a good job overall here, I thought. Never had a losing season. Never had a losing season his whole career. But 8 seasons, 3 NCAA tournament bids. It wasn't a big surprise that they decided to make a change.
Moving on now, we'll stop with the basketball talk and we'll go on and talk about football. And this decade for Razorback football started off really great, then ended kind of on a slide. Mm-hmm. But there is a few guys that stood out to you in the football, and really they were both under center and they were both brothers, the Allen brothers.
Yeah, unique situation. I'm sure it's happened before, but you have one brother start and then he gets succeeded by his younger brother, and then they're both from Fayetteville. I mean, I guess they were born in different places because their dad, Bobby Allen, was an assistant coach and moved around. But certainly they grew up here. Bobby moved here in 1998 when Houston Nutt got the job. Bobby was on the defensive staff. And so, those guys, literally grew up around the program. I mean, you'd see them out of practice as little kids running around and doing stuff, and then you'd hear these exploits they were doing at Fayetteville High. And then, you kind of wondered. And they both came here, and they had really good careers. I know it's always amazed me, or I don't know if that's the right word, that some fans would act like, well, they're only starting because they're Bobby Allen's kids. And you're like, okay, Brett Bielema is not going to say, I'm not going to start the best quarterback. I've known Bobby for a couple of years, so I'm going to start his sons and just, see what happens. I mean, obviously it doesn't work that way. You start the best players. I also think when you look at the craziness of the quarterback position, especially the last couple of years where 8 different guys started, I hope people will appreciate, if they didn't already, I hope they would appreciate the stability that Brandon and Austin brought to the position and the team. And if they appreciated them, I hope they appreciate them even more so now. But yeah, the thing I liked as a media guy, a reporter, is that, you know, they were always available. They talked every week. You know, they growing up around the program, I think their dad being Coach and they understood what being the quarterback at Arkansas means. You know, in good times and bad, you know, for fair or not, you're the face of the program. I mean, the coach is obviously, but the quarterback really is. Whether it's, you know, Brandon Allen, you know, Ryan Mallett, Tyler Wilson, you know, going back, you know, Quinn Grovey, Brad Taylor, you know, whoever, and, you know, Zach Clark, Matt Jones. And so they understood that. So they were available almost every week unless, you know, they were hurt that week or something. And even I could tell after games, you know, some of the games they took a real beating, physical beating, and they would have had a tough loss. So, you know, they're probably feeling really bad physically and they're not feeling very good emotionally. And yet they'd always come and talk. You know, they didn't give one-word answers. They understood what it meant to be the Arkansas quarterback and represent the team and the program. So they were always good to deal with. I remember that crazy, was it 53-52, the Ole Miss, the Hunter Heath game down at Ole Miss, and Brandon literally getting carried off the field. That was just cool because he'd been through so much crap. I hope it's okay to say that on a podcast.
It is.
And, you know, it was just cool to see. I think that was a pretty spontaneous thing. I don't think it was like all that. You know, it was just, it showed what how his teammates felt about him and they understood how tough he was, you know. And, and also that I think he threw, was it 7 touchdowns he threw against Mississippi State and Dak Prescott. And boy, you just, and I'm going to say, I'm down there on the sideline with several media guys and we're watching Arkansas get ready for that field goal. And before it, we didn't necessarily say it's going to be blocked, but you're saying, why is he taking the ball out of Allen's hands? Because there were two things you're thinking. First of all, their field goal game's been pretty shaky. Brandon is on fire. And also, hey, Dak Prescott's on the other team. So you want to score as much as you can. So there was absolutely no doubt in my mind they would have scored another touchdown there. They would have eaten up a little more clock. And we'll never know what would have happened. And obviously, Brad Bielema knows a whole lot more about football than I do, but I always – And like I said, there were 4 or 5 of us going, and I think probably 90% of the stadium was going, what the, you know, fill in the word, and it's going on. And so that was really too bad that Brandt had such a great game and didn't really get to enjoy it. It was kind of like when Mason Jones scored 40 against Auburn and they lost, and he took the blame for it, which I respect, but obviously that was kind of falling on the sword for the team. But yeah, really enjoyed covering those guys. And then Frank Ragnow, the center. We played some guard too, but, you know, came all the way here from Minnesota. Just such a great player. You know, he's first round pick by the Lions and starting in the NFL. Now, he was such a good guy to deal with and talk to, and another guy that really was a good representative of the team. But there were a lot of great football players you could talk about, but those guys just stood out to me.
When you think about Brandon in that Mississippi State game, one of the most mind-boggling things is, like you said, Brandon was playing Dak Prescott, not this team that Dak Prescott was on anyway. And he outdueled the future quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys that game. Like, straight up, if you look at the stats, Brandon had a better game than Dak. And they didn't get the win. That's just the sad part about that entire game there between him and Dak Prescott, Mississippi State, is that this guy had a fantastic game, was playing lights out, and couldn't get the win.
Yeah, if he had, I don't think this would have happened, but if he had thrown a pick like in the end zone at the end, and I would not have said, wow, why didn't you kick the field goal? Because I just didn't have a whole lot of confidence in their field goal unit, because I know it would have been a chip shot, but that's so much pressure. And I don't know if I want to say, Cole Hedlund, good kid. He went to North Texas and helped, you know, drill Arkansas. Right. I think he kicked 3 field goals against them or something, that 42-17 game. But Cole here was just kind of shaky. And you felt like Brandon was Cool Hand Luke, man. I mean, he was – and certainly that night he was at – I think his play was at an all-time high. And, you know, that team went 8-5, I believe, had a good win over K-State and the Kansas State in the Liberty Bowl. But really, they should have won 10 games probably. They should have beaten Toledo. Just a lot of weird things happened in that game. They should have beaten Mississippi State. Now, you can say maybe they shouldn't have beaten Ole Miss too, but I don't know. I mean – That team I really thought was a really great team, and they could have been 10-3, or, you know, they could have won 10 or 11 games if things had fallen a little bit better for them.
Moving on from football, you also cover some of the lesser known sports like the baseball and the track, and we'll start with track. And you've gotten to cover some people that have got gold medals in track and field that started at the University of Arkansas.
Yeah, Omar McLeod was from Jamaica and just a really delightful, likable guy and an incredible athlete. He won a couple NCAA titles here in the short hurdles, you know, the 60-meter hurdles indoors, the 110 hurdles outdoors. And he also was really good on relays. And he's so good. He kept training here. He went pro after his sophomore year. And because track athletes, they don't make the kind of money football or basketball players do, but there's definitely good money to be made out there. And he went to the 2016 Olympics and won a gold medal, you know. And he's, I don't know what he was, 22 or 3 or something. He wasn't even that old. So he's all, you know, and so he's going to have a good shot to win another gold medal in Tokyo, I think. So it was just really fun to cover a guy that good. And then, of course, Sandy Morris, she transferred in here from North Carolina. And she has a pretty good vaulter. But Brian Compton, he's like the vault whisperer or something. He just takes kids to another level. And also, he gets really good athletes. And I think Sandy improved her PR, personal best, the personal record, like over a foot. Like she went from 14-7 to 15-7. So she won NCAA title. And then she went on to the Olympics, won a silver medal. And she's really the top, you know, American vaulter now. She can stay healthy. It's a hard sport to stay healthy in because, you know, going over that bar ain't easy. And but she'll have a shot. She'll probably be one of the favorites to win the gold medal. And then the Kamers, the Weeks twins, Lexi and Tori. It was always funny because when you get the results sheets, it always said Victoria for Tori and Alexis for Lexi. But no, I never heard anybody call them that. And they both got married. So then it became Lexi Jacobus. She married Derek Jacobus, a decathlete here at Arkansas. And then Tori, yeah, well, she's Tori Hauger, and I'm sorry, I can't remember her husband's name. And then Lexi won like five NCAA football titles, and then Tori finally got, and she'd done really well. She's always All-American. And then she won an NCAA title in her last meet last June. And so that was really cool. So they won multiple. They both won SEC titles, a lot of SEC titles, a lot of NCAA titles. And they were just really, obviously, great athletes. They're just really good young ladies. I mean, I think they were 4-0 students studying to be pharmacists. And the rare times they would have like an off meet, like I think they got second and third at the SEC meet here last year. And I remember the media people, you know, the SID people at the other schools were just shocked. Like the twins didn't win, you know, and it was really a matter of, it wasn't like who was going to win. It was just which twin's going to win. And a girl from Vanderbilt whose name escapes me just had a real good day. And then talking to the twins, they were both kind of banged up. They didn't use that as an excuse, but you know, they were very approachable and gave good quotes. So they just always were obviously great athletes, but also really good to deal with.
And then moving on from track to baseball, a season that has started recently, you covered some guys that are in the MLB right now. Andrew Benintendi, James McCann. There's multiple guys that you've covered at the Arkansas Razorbacks, but you said those guys kind of stick out to you. Why did Benintendi stick out to you other than his play?
Well, he was a guy who came as a freshman. He's from Cincinnati. He was, I think the Reds made him kind of a hometown pick, late round. And I remember Dave Van Horn talking about him before the season and saying if he was a little taller, a little bigger, you know, he wouldn't be here. I mean, he would have been a really high draft pick. And so Andrew was a plus-plus center fielder and a decent hitter. But that first year, I want to say he hit about 280. You could tell he needed to develop some. And then that next year, as a sophomore, he just took off. He spent, a lot of guys go and play summer ball, which, you know, obviously is a good idea. They can get a lot more experience. But Andrew stayed up here and just basically worked on the weights. And it wasn't like he, you know, added 100 pounds or something like that, but he's got bigger and stronger. Of course, he was at that age, where you can change your body, you know, pretty in a matter of months. And so he just took off that sophomore year and just, he was like, you know, Mike Trout or something. He was like an Arkansas version of Mike Trout, you know, center fielder that could just get covered all that ground out there. He hit for power. He hit for average. He had good speed. And I didn't realize till maybe, I don't know, March or something. Sometime during the year, I remember we were at a Swatters Club and Dave Van Horn was on the crowd and he mentioned that Andrew is going to be draft eligible, because if you turn 21 within so many weeks of the draft, I don't remember what the exact, it's like maybe it's 6 weeks or something, but he was going to be 21 and he was draft eligible. And it hadn't occurred to me, I don't think it occurred to too many other people, that he might be drafted. But with the kind of year he was having, you know, Dave Van Horn obviously understands these things. And he knew, hey, he's not going to be back. And then really it was just a matter of how high is he going to be picked. And he just, you know, was a National Player of the Year, number 7 overall pick by the Red Sox. So obviously you're not going to turn that down. And he was just so much fun to watch. It was just cool to get to cover a player that good that you said, hey, that guy's going to get to the big leagues pretty quick. He got there even quicker than I thought, because I think he was in the big leagues by his like second year of pro ball. And, you know, then he obviously, you know, played on some great Red Sox teams, and he just signed a, I think, avoid arbitration, 2-year deal for $10 million. He's obviously worth a whole lot more than that. The Players Association needs to get to where they're getting more money younger. But he was just a ton of fun to cover. And then I wrote down some other guys. Carson Chatty was a fable. Kid, actually so old I covered his dad, Chris, who was actually Dave Van Horn's double play combo. Dave Van Horn in 82, I believe it was second baseman. And Chris was the shortstop. So they were middle infielders together. And then Carson was a guy that came here, and he was a good high school player from Fayetteville, but it wasn't like you thought, okay, this guy's going to be a star. Kind of waited his turn, played different positions. He caught, he played center. And then he found a home at second base, and, man, he just had a great senior year, helped him get to Omaha, obviously, and just a real clutch hitter. And just, you know, and a guy obviously loved Arkansas. It was cool to see a Fayetteville kid whose dad played here, you know, finish his career like that. And then, yeah, James McCann, just kind of a personal favorite. He's, number one, he's just a great guy. And he was a really good catcher, really good hitter. I think everybody remembers that 3-run home run he hit against LSU. I think it was in 2011 on a Friday night. And, you know, just such a clutch play. And that's made I'm not sure how many times I've heard Baum Walker Stadium now, I guess, louder than that. Maybe the Wichita regional and a few other times. But, yeah, and then he got drafted by the Tigers, who's my favorite team, even though right now they're terrible. And he was a really good player for the Tigers. He's with the White Sox now. Personally, I'm happy for him because the Tigers are in a major rebuild. White Sox are a little further along that rebuild. And he was an all-star last year, so that was really cool. And I guess those were the guys I wrote. Oh, Casey Opitz. He's a really great catcher. I mean, he's probably every bit as good defensively as guys like, you know, James McCann and other great catchers they've had. And he's just a real, I don't know, effervescence the right word. He's just a really outgoing guy. He's really funny. He's a great interview for us. And I think he probably helps keep his teammates loose. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure on these guys, high expectations. So I think Casey Opitz probably has a great personality for the clubhouse and the team. And I think he's going to hit pretty well this year as a switch hitter, too.
This past decade, starting with James McCann, it seems like the Arkansas baseball program has been able to develop a lot of good catchers behind the plate. Is that something that Dave Van Horn is doing, or is it just the guys he's bringing in?
Oh, I think it's probably a combination of things. I think really good players want to play here. You know, James came from California, and Casey Opitz is from Colorado. Of course, Grant Cooks is right here in Fayetteville. But I think, you know, number one, Arkansas has got really good players at every position. So, I mean, they have a great program. You know, players want to come here and play. But I also think it speaks to the coaching staff and the job they do developing guys. And, I mean, that's such a key position. It's kind of like the quarterback, you know. It's funny. I was talking to Connor Nolan the other day and asking him if he missed playing football. And he said, yeah, he misses some, but, you know, he obviously made the right decision focusing on baseball. And we talked a little bit about Casey Opitz and how good it is to have a catcher like that. And he basically said Casey's like the quarterback of the team. We kind of laughed about that, you know, because kind of went from being a football quarterback to now he's thrown to a baseball quarterback. But, yeah, Casey, a catcher is just such a key position defensively. A lot of the guys have called pitches. I mean, Matt Hobbs and the pitching coach and Casey really go over the scouting reports in great detail, probably a lot like what they do at the big league level going into an SEC series. It's like, hey, the Red Sox are going to play the Yankees. Arkansas is going to play LSU or Alabama or whoever. And I just think, you know, those pitchers trust him so much. The coaching staff trusts him so much. And he's going to be a pretty high draft pick. I think he'll be a top 100 draft pick.
Bob, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, hope that was good.
Oh, it was fantastic. Bob Holt joining us here on the Whole Hog Podcast. Once again, if you haven't listened to the other podcasts, you can go back in the series on our podcast channel. We have one more coming up to tease you that there. That's going to be with Scotty Bordelon. We're going to talk a lot of basketball and just a lot of things in general. Scotty and I also host our own podcast called the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. So if you would like more basketball information about the Arkansas Razorbacks and the SEC, make sure to follow this channel and it'll pop up as well. Well, as I said, Bob Holt joined us today. Big thanks to him. And then also thank you for joining us here on the Whole Hog Podcast. Until next week, we'll see you then.